Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wiss. Let's take a ride through space on this.
Hey, everybody, this is Greg with Greg Talks number 4. Today we are sponsored by Sonar.software. It is the complete billing ISP solution, so it's kind of the easy button as far as automated billing of your customers. It does your Radius back in. It takes care of your IP addressing, delegations, things like that. So give it a look. Pop over to Sonar.software, kindly sponsoring this podcast today. So today it's another quick one, me by myself. Again, I did the rush thing where I waited the last minute. Busy running, so I didn't get any guests, but I'm going to try and get guests for the next one. But let's jump right in. So one of the questions I was thinking about is, why is getting feedback so difficult sometimes? And is it a case of people want to be nice, right? It's that whole, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. I am really exceptionally good at taking constructive criticism. Maybe my face says otherwise. My wife says that I have an angry face. I always look mad, but I'm not. I'm usually in a pretty good mood. And I really appreciate feedback. So feedback on the podcast, feedback in my professional life, even sometimes in my personal life. I really like to hear what people have to say, and I try not to take it as an insult, but as an opportunity for me to improve, right? How do I know I'm doing something wrong if nobody tells me? Maybe I'll continue to just keep my angry face on and have nobody tell me. Maybe that's the easy solution for me. But yeah, definitely give me feedback. I'm curious about always hearing how I can improve and change and be better and different. So let me know what you guys think. I was just curious, you know, because sometimes I think silence is bad. It's almost like somebody's given up, so they don't care anymore, so they don't bother to say anything. So keep that in mind, I guess, in your personal life when somebody ask for feedback, or you have an opportunity to maybe give feedback in some way. So let's see, how do you remember your accomplishments? To be honest with you, my memory is terrible, and something that brings that to mind is this. So I keep a doc where I try and remember, and it doesn't always happen, but I try and remember daily to pop in and add some stuff in there about what's going on during the day. But say you're building a resume or something like that. How do you remember what you've done over the last few years, or some of your major projects or accomplishments? How do you guys retain that stuff? So for me, normally I have to be talking to somebody, and it has to kind of come up organically in context, and then I'll remember things. But I'm really bad at like kind of rolling back and remembering my major accomplishments over time. I can remember the stuff I've done. Some of the highlights I remember, some of the stuff I don't, you know, like when I'm troubleshooting, and I fix a problem for somebody, I'm probably going to forget it. But major accomplishments, I try and remember those, but not always. So just curious what you guys do to remember those sorts of things. Probably the real answer is probably as you hit them, go ahead and update your resume or other things like that that help you retain them and put them, you know, kind of in long-term storage there. Something else I ran into recently is iOS XR. We were doing diversification. So we had a chassis where when we installed it, we only had one 10 gig line card. So we had to get that guy in quick because of some other hardware issues we're having on another chassis. And so we got it in there. And subsequently, recently, we migrated to adding an additional line card. And so we moved some of the interfaces up to that line card. Not any really big major changes. It was really simple and quick, but something I really liked about it is that it allowed us to duplicate the configuration. So I had the identical configuration, say from interface 5, and I put it up to the next line card on its interface 5, and it let me put not only the same descriptions and all that stuff which you would expect it to do, but also allowed me to put overlapping IP addressing. The idea being that interface above was, you know, in a down state because the optic wasn't live, right? So I'm going to migrate from one to the other. So allowing me to do that meant whenever the change window came, all the tech had to do was unplug the cable from an optic 1 inch below and then move up to the optic above. Boop. And it came up, right, with the identical IP information. And then as soon as we vetted everything after we had moved all the interfaces, just cleared out the configuration from the other ones. I thought that was so brilliant, because in like most of your regular iOS stuff, it won't let you assign IP addressing in, you know, overlapping IP addressing on interfaces. And this actually lets you do that, which I thought was brilliant. So yet another feature of iOS XR that I really enjoy that I didn't know that I would, but there it is. Oh man, what else? We had a change window where we were migrating some server infrastructure, some of the stuff on the network side. And I got a call. So it was my team that was doing it, but I was sleeping. And so I get a call at about 4 a.m. saying, hey, we're having these weird intermittent problems where these things, blah, blah, blah. And I was just thinking, this guy, you know, he started the window, finished it, everything looked fine, went to sleep, and then got woke up at about 2 a.m. or somewhere around in there and had been troubleshooting for 2 hours before he called me. And I was able to get to the root of the problem in about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. And yeah, but part of it is, you know, he really was operating off of not a lot of sleep, had been staring at it, and, you know, had just become numb to it all. And it was just, no matter how much he was going to look at it, he wasn't going to figure it out. It was one of the things, he had hit a wall. And it's amazing how a fresh set of eyes from, you know, another engineer or even somebody outside sometimes can really quickly help you get to the root of the problem, right? So he was chasing some red herrings, right? Some symptoms that, you know, were over here on the left when they really were needed to be focused on the things that were manifesting over here on the right. And it turns out they had miscabled some stuff. We have some redundant ASAs in there, and the interface 3 is the redundant interface. And so when you have two ASAs, there's this dedicated interface between the two. It's called a failover interface, and they're hard cabled between the two. And when I jumped in the ASA and I did a show fail, right, to look at the failover module, it said, hey, this is the primary Unix, so it's primary and standby. And it said primary was active, and then it scrolled down and it said secondary unit failed, like it's not detected. And I was like, that's not good. So show interface, it was actually up, so that's bad. The failover interfaces are up, but they're not communicating. So he went up there and they had that thing all kinds of crazy cabled. So fixed that cabling, and then immediately everything started working, right? And when you're from what I understand, they were moving a lot of different pieces. And it totally makes sense, right? Something's probably going to get swapped here or there, or one little thing will fall in the gaps and can be out of reach. And so sometimes, middle of the night, it's nice to have just an extra set of eyes to pop in, take a look really quick. But, you know, why do we always wait till the last minute? You know, even at that late hour, I understand that he didn't want to wake me up, and I super appreciate that, but it could have saved him a lot of trouble. And man, 4 a.m., getting woke up at 4 a.m. is that horrible time where, you know, something's broke, so you are up, right, and you're juiced, and you're in the moment, and, you know, all of those chemicals are dumping into your body. And, you know, that cortisol or whatever it is, the stress hormone, it's got you tweaked, and then so you can't really go back to sleep, and so, man, it just totally screwed me up. So I'd rather have gotten woke up at 2 as opposed to 4. Anyway, something else I also noticed is how hard late night change windows are getting on me. Speaking of not being able to sleep, it took me a couple of days to recover from that. And I don't recall when I was in my mid-20s having any problems with crazy late night schedules and sometimes doing multiples, but I ended up doing 2 change windows. That one previously I wasn't anticipating getting woke up on. The next one I was actively a participant in, so I couldn't really skip out on that one. So 2 nights in a row of kind of later night change windows, man, it's getting difficult on me. I assume it's how people describe drinking as they get older in their 30s and 40s, that their body just doesn't rebound. I don't really drink. Well, I can't even say really, I don't drink at all. So I can't attest to that, but I certainly know that late night change windows are getting more difficult on me. So let's see. Something else I turned up, again, was another WAP LTE. You know, the MikroTik WAPs that have the LTE interface, and you get a Ting SIM card, and I usually buy like 5 at a time. These little guys right here just comes with a little SIM, and I think they're $1 a piece, and they don't really start billing you until you put them into production. So it never hurts to have just a few laying here so that they're already ready to go in provision. Ting, I can't remember how much it costs. I think it's about $8 a month. just to have one activated. And then as you start using data, so if you're really using it for out-of-band management, which is mostly what I do, they're great. This one, in this instance, I used it with a Grandstream HT818. It's an analog converter. It's got an 8-port FX. It's got 8 FXS ports on it. It was really easy to configure. I configured it with VoIP.ms. It was significantly faster than I anticipated it going. There's the setting tweaks. They don't have this precise model, but they have an example of one of the Grand Streams on there that's like the 2-port guy. And so you just follow the configuration guide for that. And then you're good. And so I wanted each one of these to be kind of independent. And so the way you do it is in VoIP.ms, you create a sub account and you assign each one to a sub account. Like when you create the sub account, you say, hey, anything dialing out from this account, what should it appear as outbound on its DID? And then you go to the DID manager and you pick the DID and you assign it to a specific, you tell it to route to a specific sub account, and that is it. And then in the HT818 and its admin panel for the FXS ports on each line, you just give it the sub account credentials for each one to its corresponding line, and that is it. I mean, it configured so simply, works so elegantly. The only problem I ran into is with the WAP LTE, the HT818 will not register. Well, I mean, it'll register with the VoIP.ms service, but calls don't complete right. It's super janky. And so what I did is I created a tunnel. I did an SSTP tunnel to one of my data center routers and had it just pop out there, and everything worked perfectly. So keep that in mind. It is a good workaround. You just have to tunnel that traffic out to make sure that it all completes properly. And this was for a quick temporary fix for somebody. They had a billing that was going live and they needed to have some POTS lines available to do some stuff. So in a pinch, it is awesome to be able to just throw this together in, I mean, 20 minutes probably is all it takes to configure all this stuff, and then you could save the day. So it worked out pretty well for me. Yeah, let's see. The 818, actually pretty easy to work with. It's got a lot of options, but corresponding to your provider and how they want you to configure it, there's not a whole lot of tweaks you have to make. I think it took about 3 minutes to just make the whatever the handful of tweaks where they wanted, and then add the account information in there. So pretty easy. Let's see. I just finished my last LinkedIn Learning course, the third CCNA course. Big round of applause. Yeah, I'm golf clapping right here. Yeah, yeah. Yay for me. I ended up creating the last two courses and recording them all at the same time, and I did it all in a big rush. A big time rush. I think I recorded all of them in the span of about 5 days. So it was just chunks of nights. I would just record. And then on the weekend, I crammed on a Sunday and ended up recording like 14 or 15 or 16 videos all in one day, which is a substantial amount. It may not seem like a lot, but it is a lot when you're cramped in a booth and you're having to record over and over, and you've got to use your right voice and you can't screw up anything, and your slides have to all be in the right order and then flowing correctly. It's such a pain in the butt, but it's all done, and it always feels like there is a weight lifted off of me. But it's also interesting too, because I am super motivated at the end of this, because I had been in the afternoons, I'd been putting in, I mean, burning lunches, afternoons, putting in so much time. Basically every free moment I had, I was either building the script, right? So everything I say is scripted. I have it all scripted out. Building the slide decks, I have to build all of those, or consumed by recording. And so at the end of that, it just feels like, oh man, I've got all this energy, I've got this momentum, what can I do with it? And traditionally I would be so burned out that I would just stop. And so this one I decided, you know what? I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to put this time into Ansible. I need to learn some automation platforms. I need to get a little bit more into DevOps. And this is my opportunity. So I have been spending a lot more time with Ansible, and I'm happier for it. You know, I'm some of the things are starting to click. They're starting to come together. I like that. I don't have the full picture. The best way for me to learn things is come up with scenarios and then build the things to meet those scenarios. So the first one I came up with was like a metro network with four switches all interconnected. And what I wanted to do was have it auto provision a customer, right? So customers come off of switch one and they go over to switch four, right, off of access ports. And so I wanted to reach out to these switches, configure the VLAN, then configure the trunk ports, you know, the VLAN allowed. This is all Cisco kit. And then configure the access ports. And I had to do that statically. And that worked. And then I changed it to Ansible has this prompt ability so that it will actually prompt the user for the information. And so in the prompts, by default, it thinks you have secure stuff in there. So you have to tell it not secure so you can actually see what you're typing. And then after that, I got it to prompt. So I have in my playbook, right, which is your YAML file that has all the things you want it to do. In there, I have it to where it first calls all the switches and does the stuff. So it prompts in that one. And then whenever it moves to the next line where it's actually redefining which host it's going to go out and configure, the variables no longer worked. And I was like, great. So it's the scope in which you create them is where they're contained. So I had to do a good bit of Googling to figure out that Ansible has this option called setfax, and it allows you to define a variable. So what you do is you prompt, you get your information, and then you use setfax, and you take that information that you got from the prompt and you set them into other variables. And that variable becomes, scoped to that entire playbook. So everything in that playbook can actually read it, which is nice. So then I can use those across all of the various things. So already it's just, I have to come up with these scenarios for myself so that I'll force myself to learn all these little things. So now I can run the playbook and it actually prompts me for what's it going to say on the interface, what VLAN am I going to use, and what port is it going to configure on. And so it will reach out to all the kit, configure all that stuff using the inputted variables, right? So that it's not so static. So the idea being you can run this script every time and then just fill out the information and boom, it'll go out and configure all that for you. And you know, it's going to be configured correctly, which is nice. And so Ansible has these things called modules, and the modules are interesting because they allow you, depending on your manufacturer and the version of code and all this stuff that you're running, these modules can intelligently know, say for example, interface configuration, like access VLAN and all these things. It knows what an interface is supposed to look like. So it'll reach out and say, hey, how are you configured now? Do you look like this? If you do, I'm not going to do anything. No change is necessary. If you don't look like this, I'll go ahead and modify you to look like that, and it'll report back what it did. So not everything is in a module. I noticed that the basic stuff is, right? So like configuring a port to be access or trunk, configuring the encapsulation to 802.1Q or whatever. One thing I did notice is that if you're doing Q and Q, like on a metro network, in a Cisco, it's switch port mode dot one Q tunnel. And it doesn't support that in the standard iOS module. So how do you work around that? Well, there's an iOS config module, which basically says, hey, push these configuration commands over to the device. So you can't kind of intelligently check whether everything exists in the format you anticipate ahead of time, right? Because they don't have everything fleshed out in the modules. They really just have the big average things, I guess, in there. So anything special like that, you'd have to throw in the config guy, and it wouldn't necessarily be able to check whether it's that way in advance. It would just go ahead and assign that assign that property to it. It's still cool. It's still interesting. And I know you can write your own modules, and people have written their own modules. It's written in Python. I've done a little bit of Python scripting in the past, but it's been a while. So I assume if I get too far down in the weeds, I might end up playing with some of that stuff at some point, but not yet. But yeah, so I'm trying to, you know, when we're sitting on the couch watching RuPaul's Drag Race or whatever, I try and, you know, just something that doesn't require a lot of attention, I try and double duty. So I'm trying to keep that momentum, and I'm trying to stay on the DevOps route to learn a little bit more of that, add a little bit more automation in my life. And I'm focusing on network first, but I'm very quickly going to start doing some server stuff along with the network stuff, kind of hand in hand there. So let's see, what else? I was thinking about my sound booth that I use to record my LinkedIn courses, and I built it with, I think, two and a half sheets of OSB, you know, because it's cheaper than plywood. It's really thin. If I could go back, I probably would have made it with MDF, right? Something denser that's going to be a little bit more resistant to allowing sound in. I built it with a few one-by-ones kind of in the corners to hold things together. A few sound tiles. I used some industrial carpet, kind of stapled it around the walls and the floor and the ceilings. Basically, every bit of that surface is covered. Then I used some sound tiles. Ordered, I think, 15 or 20 of those and stapled them around. And then I had an old foam mattress that I stuck behind the monitor. You know, one of those like mattress toppers or whatever that was old. So I just shoved that joker in there too. And I mean, it's all less than probably $150 worth of materials. And it's made considerably more than that. So it was totally worth it. But yeah, if I had gone back, I would have done it with, maybe MDF. It would have been far more expensive, but far quieter, which I guess is the idea of the sound booth. Although the sound booth is quiet enough, it's just when a plane flies overhead, I can hear that. There's a train that's a long way off, but I can still kind of hear that. And I don't necessarily know that it gets picked up on the recording. Nobody's ever complained about it, but it bothers me. And also, being it made out of OSB, it's lighter, so I can kind of slide it around in there a little bit better. Somebody said something like it's a standing coffin or whatever. It is fairly small. I didn't make it huge. I wanted it to take up as little space as possible and still meet the requirements, which it does. And I don't spend a lot of time in there, and it encourages me not to spend a lot of time in there. Gets the job done. Also, I like the idea of having kind of a dedicated space and not just recording here, right? Like, you see all this stuff in my background. Theoretically, if I move any of this stuff, it can change the sound profile in my room, whereas that is a dedicated sound profile. It never changes. It's always the same, so I don't have to worry about it as much. But also, it's kind of a dedicated space, so when I go in there, I'm in, you know, recording mode. So that's my, you know, that's my space. It's like, you know, when a cop puts on his uniform, he's a cop now. So whenever I go in there, I'm ready to record. So maybe that has something to do with it too. I like that. Let's see, what else did I do this week or last week, whatever it happened to be? I do daily SMTP test emails on my Windows machines. And after the rollover of 2020, some of mine were just written in AutoIt that would basically telnet to 127.0.0.1 on the local boxes, because most of them relay off themselves. The idea being, if I have a single relay server and it fails, then, you know, none of my systems are going to go. So I like having them all independent. Having them all independent, it's nice to have them send a daily test email so that I can ensure that they're still working. But when 2020 rolled, a couple of them quit working with a direct telnet for whatever reason. So I switched it over to using BLAT, B-L-A-T, and I've used that before a long time ago and continue to use it. It's a nice little email utility made for Windows, BLAT.exe, and you can wrap up files and do all kinds of interesting stuff and send emails with it. So it's really easy to script that for Windows machines to send out a daily test email. I send them out at 2 p.m. and there's a set number we're expecting to see, and we always count and make sure that we see them. If we don't, we can investigate. So it's nice, anything that's part of your monitoring infrastructure, make sure that it actually is capable of still sending. Let's see what else. Oh man, doing some reconfiguration on some gateway routers in the data center. And previously, so we do backbone routers that terminate internet connections and upstream providers and internet exchanges or whatever. And those break down to gateway routers. So the gateway routers are what customers actually connect to. And previously, we were holding full internet routes on those guys. And they are SUP723 BXLs, and they are running 770,000 routes. And I'm going through and I'm changing it so that it only has local routes and default route. If you want full routes, you have to go to the route server. And so the first gateway router changed it last week, sometime during the week. And it went from 770,000 routes to 114 total routes. It's pretty crazy. The CPU on that box sits at zero most of the time till the BGP process runs, and then you'll see it go up just to like 20% for a minute or two, which I have never seen the CPU on that box so low since I have been working for the data center, and that's been since late 2006. So it's crazy. It's crazy how little work that router's having to do nowadays. But it's nice. Before, whenever there would be fluctuations on one of the backbone routers or the routes, those are ASR 9000, so they have no problems. They don't even bat an eye. But these things, the CPU would spike for a while, and we'd have problems pulling them with SNMP and stuff like that. We wouldn't drop any customer traffic. All forwarding was fine. That's how those things are designed. We were just, the management plane would have a little bit of problem, and now it absolutely doesn't. So it's really nice. Let's see. Oh man. Oh yeah, yeah. Here's another note on Ansible. It's talking about the importance of spacing in YAML. Spacing shows you the precedence of where any of the information you have in the YAML file is. And so I've gotten bit several times by not having the spacing correct. And so sometimes just adding two spaces to something fixes everything, or not having two spaces breaks everything. It's kind of interesting how that works. Let's see what else. Outlook keeps popping up. They did an update or something happened, and I don't want to close. All I have to do is close and reopen my Outlook and it'll fix it. But I've got a lot of stuff going and I don't want to mess with it. So it keeps popping up this window asking me to log in when I don't actually have to log in. I can click cancel or okay or the X, and they all perform the same thing, and it keeps popping up every so often. So I opened AutoIt. And whenever you install SCITE or SCE, something like that, it's their IDE, their integrated development environment, or whatever it happens to be, where you can code in there. It's really nice. Whenever you install that, it's got this little tool that's a finder. And so you click on this little crosshairs and you drag it over the window, and it gives you all the information you need to interact with that window. And so I just basically said, hey, every 5 or 10 milliseconds or something like that, check to see if this window exists. If it does, kill it. And now it's not a problem because it just disappears. So I didn't fix the problem, but I fixed the symptom, and that's all I need for now. And when I reboot my machine, it'll be fine. But that script took all of, 45 seconds to a minute to write, and now it does the trick. So it's amazing how quick you can duct tape stuff with AutoIt. That's what kind of worries me about switching to a different sort of desktop, is that I won't be able to hack stuff together nearly as quickly as I do now, and I won't be able to band-aid it when I hit a problem. And that's kind of scripting in general too. Scripting on Linux, I am so much slower scripting on a Linux machine than I am on Windows, because AutoIt has made me lazy. The environment is just so quick and simple to develop in. I like it. Even though it's not a real development environment, I guess it's not a real... I don't know. I mean, I've written some real applications that have been running for years and years and do some really important tasks in AutoIt, or AutoIt, however you want to say it. So I don't know. I know it's not the right way of doing things always, but it sure does get the job done very elegantly. Oh, man. So this was a quick little bit of information, another short one for you guys. I'm thinking about putting one together with our old timers, Nick Braulio and John, last name starts with an O. I can't remember how it goes, but they're our old guys. And I think both of them dealt with some dial-up networkers back in the day and some older networks. And so I'm just curious to see what their thoughts are on how networking was approached back then, how they felt about it back then, and then how they approach it now and how they feel about it now, right? It's obviously going to be very different. I was just curious how they felt about that stuff, so we can okay boomer them. what are your thoughts and feelings on that stuff? I was just curious if you guys have any other kind of interesting editorial ideas. Let me know. Again with the feedback, I was just curious, what do you guys want to hear about? What interests you? What's curious to you? I like hearing people talk. I like picking at them and probing them and asking them questions. So any of that other stuff is great. So thank you guys. If you want to support us, we're talking about the Slack, I think, before. And those old timers are in the Slack. The boomers are in the Slack. It's patreon.com/brotherswisp. You can throw us a couple of bones and you get access to our patron only Slack. Anything else? Questions, comments? Keep them coming. GregSoul.com. Thank you guys so much. We'll talk to you next time. Bye. Informative facts, we're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, cause fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.